Talk Back Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe
on ABC Radio Adelaide.
Good morning and welcome to Talk Back Gardening. It's the Saturday of the Easter long weekend. John, so many people would be in the garden today, tomorrow, Monday, enjoying the fruits of their labour.
From a gardening point of view, perfect gardening weather. Whether you're planting, whether you're propagating, whether you're fertilising, so many jobs to do. The important thing is bear in mind how dry it's been. 3 millimetres so far for March. I think that'll be it. Nothing at all in February. And the soil is extremely dry. Just keep that in mind. And also, if you're going to re-wet your soils, consider using a soil wetting agent. There are a big range of them out there now, and they can make a very significant difference in wetting up the soil if it's been dry for a long time. But there is a lot of excitement at this time of the year. It's the end of the deciduous fruit tree season, almost, in terms of harvest. But it's a time when people are focusing very much on evergreens, and we're used to citrus and avocados and mangoes. And the person that's had a lot to do with introducing and encouraging people to grow those three evergreen plants is Chris Perry. He's a fruit and nut specialist at McLaren Flat, and I'm very much in his debt because right now, this Easter weekend is probably one of his busiest weekends for selling the fruits and nuts that he sells. So welcome here this morning to Talk Back Gardening.
Welcome, Chris. It's so great to have you in the studio. We'll get into questions with Chris in just a moment. So please call through on 1300 222 891. Send us a text, a comment if you like on 0467 922 891. I have a couple of ABC Organic Gardener magazines to give away a little bit later in the program. And John, of course, you'll be launching the Tomato Season Survey 2024 a little later in the program.
2024 tomato season probably come to an end for most gardeners, and we want your information. If you grew tomatoes, we would like you to fill in the survey, and it's very, very easy. Tick the box or put in a number, and that's all you have to do. The computer does the rest. But great information comes from that, and we'll tell you more details about how you can be part of that survey shortly.
Definitely. But right now, Chris Perry, thank you on Easter long weekend coming into the studio on a Saturday morning. It's lovely to have you back.
Thanks, Deb. Hello, John.
Yes, so there are so many things, so many questions to fire at you. They're coming in via the text, via the emails, and I've got a whole list I want to talk to you about. So let's take a look at the season at the moment. It started off cool. And it's remained probably cooler than most people expected, even though average temperatures were actually warmer overall. It's been very dry towards the end. How would you rate the fruit growing season?
I'd rate it as difficult. Initially, the moist, cool conditions didn't really aid fruit set, especially with deciduous crops, but also with some of those evergreens that demand sunshine and warm temperatures to set fruit. So that includes mangoes and avocados in particular, and some other crops.
So you need the right kind of temperatures and a lack of rainfall when the plants are flowering.
Not necessarily a lack of rainfall, but certainly high pollen. A lot of the pollination efficiency of these crops has got to do with pollen tube growth, and pollen tube growth inside the stigma and the ovary of the female flower on, say, an avocado is determined by temperature.
Okay.
So if it's too cool, the pollen tube doesn't grow, you don't get pollination, you don't get a seed, and you don't get a fruit.
And we're now towards the end of the season, and it's a very dry season. Many people pick their fruit and walk away from their fruit trees and say, well, they can look after themselves. Could you just comment on the importance of keeping your deciduous trees in particular, keeping them ticking over, because what's going on within the fruit tree at this time of the year?
Well, if the trees maintain a good canopy, let's say, well, deciduous trees in particular, but all trees. If the trees maintain a good canopy, then the photosynthesis is still going on at a high rate, and various food matter for the trees is being laid down into the tissues, and buds are still being developed. So there is still development of wood and bud that will lead to good growth next spring.
That's it, isn't it? The fruit has been harvested and enjoyed. The tree is not growing so vigorously, but it's busy storing energy for next season. And if you don't look after it in terms of fertilizer and water now, that has a consequence probably for next springtime.
It does. So if you get early leaf drop, which would be common, I'm sure, around the place. If you get early leaf drop in deciduous trees, then you don't get that. You don't get the best bud development. And of course, leaf drop in evergreens like citrus or avocado or mango is not a sign of good health.
Probably every week for the last 4 or 5 weeks, we're saying, "I want to plant this. Is it a good time? Is now a good time to plant fruit trees?"
Yes. Yeah, well, it is. It is because, as you've been saying, the soil temperatures are up above the level at which the root systems of the evergreens will grow. So in this window, because it's mild, temperatures are mild, because the wind is down, because the plants themselves, the nursery stock, are at their best, having had all spring and summer and a fair bit of autumn to grow, It's a very nice time. The one proviso, at least one proviso, being that the soil is friable enough to promote good, quick, early root growth.
So don't abandon your preparation before you plant.
That's right. Preparation is still dreadfully important.
We're talking about soil temperatures. You know the importance of soil temperatures, and so do I, I'd like to think. And as I say, the temperatures are up around the 20 degrees at the moment, falling fast. At what stage, at what temperature, would you stop planting, say, citrus or avocados or some of the warm kind of plants that are fruit trees that do need warmer conditions?
Well, I think 16 degrees is a bit of somewhere near the cut-off point. 16, maybe a touch higher than that. Depends a bit on the crop. Avocados are going to be more sensitive to low temperatures. Citrus are going to be much more tolerant. So, but around 16 degrees, let's say.
Our guest is Chris Perry, fruit and nut specialist from McLaren Flat, and we're going to take a look at the potential for growing evergreen fruit trees in your garden. But, Deb, I'd like to think that there are some questions coming Chris's way, and we've got some that I've already noted from earlier on in the program.
Yes, look, I would say call now if you want some advice from Chris Perry. The number to call is 1-300-222-891. What will happen is we'll get to the end of the segment and there'll be lots of people that miss out. But Liz from Lobethal has called in on that number. Good morning, Liz.
Oh, hi, everybody. Yes, I would like to plant avocados. I understand I have to have two. Now, I've got a fairly small space, probably about 3 metres by 4 metres. I would like to espalier it, or them. I've already espaliered with great success my dwarf pear and fig tree, so I'm confident I can do it. Is it suitable for avocados to be espaliered? I understand that what you just said, the soil temperature needs to be at least 16 degrees. So I'm just wondering the best time of year to plant it. And also I really need to do the soil over. So I've got a bag of sheep manure and a bag of chook manure and homemade compost. And I'm also just wondering about the orientation, whether it should be east, west, or north, south. Thank you.
All in 1 minute.
That's a big ask.
All right. The first thing, Liz, is that Lobethal is on the margin because it's Adelaide Hills. Your soil temperatures will fall quicker than Adelaide temperatures and other places in the state. Given what you've told me, I'd be wary of planting, say, an avocado now. I think you might, and because you've got soil prep to do as well, and because of your approach incorporating all those composty type things, I think I'd be tempted to say wait. Wait for September, October for your avocado. Maybe you should consider having your tree in the meantime, because it won't hurt to have it at your place to get used to things. Mm. But so that's that. The question of espalier is a good one, but if you see espalier as you might with apples, with formal structured limbs in all those wonderful shapes that you sometimes see in books, I'd say that doesn't apply to evergreens in general. My view is that your evergreen espalier, whether it's a lemon tree or an avocado, is a hedge. So if you can't have exposed limbs on evergreens, and certainly not on avocados, and that's the risk. If you lay your branches out with too much time and trouble, you'll get burning of the you'll get the stems, the horizontal stems will get burnt, sunburnt, and that's bad. So it's just a hedge. Let it grow and just keep trimming and tipping and trimming to suit the shape you've allocated, which could be, you know, your 3x4 or whatever it was. You could have a hedge that big.
How thick or how deep would the hedge need to be?
I would have thought a metre, yes. Somewhere around a metre, yes. Maybe a little less.
All right, and obviously the manures, they need to go into the soil. Can you overdo it in terms of putting too much manures in the ground? Although in this Liz's situation, putting the organic matter in the soil now, getting the soil now for planting next year could be ideal.
I think that is the ideal. The only question I have against your process is that sometimes our soils are very heavy textured soils, and so look for a coarse component to your development as well. So yes, but do it now, exactly as John says, do it now.
So thanks, Liz. Lots of soil prep. Get the avocado tree in a pot ready to plant out in September later in the year. Thanks for your call. 1300 222 891 is the number. Benny's in Modbury now. Benny, you've got a mango tree. Good morning.
Yes, I've got a 15-year-old mango tree.
Nice. How's it going?
Every year has been exceptional apart from this year.
Right. Well, I think that probably does relate to the cool spring and lack of. I presume you're talking about no fruit, Benny.
Yeah. Not even a flower.
Okay. Well, I'm a bit surprised at that, but there you go. Yeah, I'm pretty confident that it'll turn around next year. You'll have just the opposite.
I've had that comment from a number of people, olives in particular. People sort of saying, look, I had a big crop last year and I don't have much of a crop this year. Is that seasonal, or that could be biennial bearing?
Well, some of it's biennial bearing, but as I mentioned earlier, the fruit set is related to temperatures. And we did have a lot of cool temperatures and not much sunshine prior to Christmas time. And I think that's affected fruit.
Had three or four questions this morning on mangoes already. Earlier on, there was the question about if you plant a seedling, how true to type is it likely to be? This one was apparently quite delicious.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, the chances are that the chances are that was a. Kensington Pride mango, yes. the famous Bowen or Kensington Pride mango, which tends, not so much now, but tends to dominate the market. But R2E2, the other variety that was mentioned, is also Bowen Kensington Pride derived. Both of these have seeds, which if somebody goes to the trouble and dissects, are made up of several segments, maybe seven or eight kind of interlocking segments, because the seed's quite big, as we all know, on a mango. The interesting thing is that of those seven or eight little segments, one of them is the true result of the recombination of the genes in the flower. In other words, it's going to be a different seedling to the mother tree. Mm. But all the rest are exactly the same. So in the case of a Bowen mango, if you plant a seed, by and large,
you've got a good chance of it being reasonable.
It'll be the same genes as the parent.
Okay, and quickly, when do mangoes mature, or when should they be harvested?
Well, for northern suburbs of Adelaide, I would think maybe late February, March. For anywhere south of the city or in the city, probably March, April, May even.
Tiffany has called from Walkerville about a macadamia. Hi, Tiffany.
Hello, Deb. I'd like to ask Chris, last week I had cause to cut my 35-foot tall macadamia down to 5-foot tall now because the dog next door ended up at the vet having eaten too many macadamias. So is it going to... Am I able to sort of think that it's going to sprout from that 5 foot, or do I have to pull the whole thing out?
I'd expect it would. When did you cut? Just now?
Last week.
Okay. There's a bit of doubt because it takes months and months for the latent buds in the bark of the macadamia to actually develop to the point where they sprout. So I'm reasonably confident you won't. Even if the tree survives, you won't see new bud development until well into next spring. So, but on balance, macadamias are a remarkably robust, strong tree. They've got a lot of the traits of other Australian natives, even in drought hardiness, even though they come from the East Coast rainforest. So I'd expect it will come back. And when it does, it might come back with a rush. You might have... During next summer, you might have a lot of strong growth. My suggestion is you trim that growth as it grows. So don't let the shoots grow to enormous length. I'd say, you might pick a length. You might pick, say, a metre or a bit less than that, preferably maybe half a metre. And every time any shoot, any bud grows and gets a half a metre in length, you pinch the tip out. Mm. So you stop it growing. And you create a lower... bushier, much more compact tree.
Wonderful. Thanks, Tiffany. Interesting question. We have got Chris Perry, fruit and nut expert in our state, in the studio this morning. I know he and John are going to be talking about some perhaps more exotic fruits that we might plant in our South Australian home gardens next.
This is Talkback Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe
on ABC Radio Adelaide.
Our guest is fruit and nut specialist from McLaren Flat, Chris Perry. We're going to explore the potential for growing evergreen fruit trees to adapt to our warmer climate. And Chris, I mentioned before, has had a significant role in encouraging gardeners here in South Australia to grow avocados and certainly mangoes recently. And Chris, you must be very, very happy to hear the number of people that are calling in and talking about growing their mangoes.
Yeah, well, it is terrific. It took a decade or so, or maybe two, for me to start to gain a bit of confidence about mangoes in Adelaide, and even now they're no certainties. I mean, they're a funny sort of tree. If they establish well and conditions suit them, they become a very easy tree to grow.
Yes.
They're quite hardy even. I've got trees even at McLaren Flat that I don't water.
Many people wouldn't be aware of your early background of tropical fruits where before you set up your own little business, but that's a story for another day. What do you see, apart from the avocados and mangoes and maybe guavas, have got the greatest potential for people to have a go at in their own garden?
Well, I suppose it comes into my mind that the custard apple group is a group of plants that are quite easy to grow in Adelaide, as it turns out. Well, we've known this for a long time, really. So they grow easily, and they're very beautiful plants. So custard apple and cherimoya are the two types. They both have a very similar fruit. The cherimoya is actually the parent plant of custard apple, as it happens. Fruit set has always been the problem, and they're difficult to get. They grow well and they flower well, but setting fruit is difficult. So hand pollination can play a big part in that. Okay. As does a new variety called Paxton, which tends to looks promising anyway as a good self-pollinator, as a custard apple.
And that's one of the beaut things that you've been able to do, say, look, this plant has got potential, and then go and find the variety or the strain that is most adaptable to South Australia. For those that are not familiar with a custard apple, just a brief description of the tree itself, its size and what it looks like, and the fruits.
Okay, well, we'll start with the fruit, because you might recognise it as a big green heart-shaped fruit. It's got knobs all over it, and you see it quite. It's common enough in the market, but you might see it in the central market rather than at the supermarket. The tree is attractive. It's a full tree, bushy tree shape, and unpruned it might get to 3 to 4 to maybe 5 meters. Pruned you can make it any shape, any size you want, and typically around 2 to 2.5 meters is good. It's beautiful because it's got a great big lush leaf, and it looks attractive.
And it's a fruit for the plains, or would it adapt to the hills, cooler districts as well?
I would think because temperatures are important when it comes to fruit set, the hills might be tricky for custard apples, but the cherimoya is not only a bit more cool tolerant, it is frost tolerant. So the cherimoya might be more the species that is grown for the Adelaide Hills.
And might they need shading during summer?
No, it's a quite a robust, sturdy sort of a tree.
So we go from a custard apple and a cherimoya to a jujube. Now, you happen to be harvesting your jujubes at the moment, I do believe.
Yes.
Yeah, and you've been talking about jujubes for quite some time. Just tell us, what is a jujube and why are they so yummy and how easy it is to grow them?
Well, the jujube is a tree that's grown in its millions in China. It's a Chinese species, and it's one of those species that is spread through westwards through the Mediterranean region and to the US and to Australia. So it's kind of got a spotty. The people know it in a kind of spotted distribution way through the whole world. It's an easy to grow tree. It's deciduous, and the fruit's like a crunchy. It's sort of apple like, but with a golden skin. But it's got a flavour quality of its own. And in Adelaide, for example, it is an easy tree to grow. It needs sunshine, that's basically.
Yeah, and if anybody wants to know what a jujube grows and might like to grow it, they might call into your nursery. You've actually got them.
Yeah, we just started to pick, like you said, just this weekend, effectively. So the fruit's available for a taste if anybody's interested.
All right, time is going to beat us. Just very, very briefly, a wompi. What's a wompi and what's its potential?
Okay, well, wompi. It's an odd one. It's a close citrus relative, and it looks a bit like a little sweet kumquat. Much finer skin. It is a tree that I would have liked to have done better with, but it's kind of awkward in some ways. If anybody comes across a wompi and has a chance to grow it, I'd strongly recommend it. It's a nice plant, easy to grow, and why not?
What about a jabotikaba?
Well, jabotikaba is quite different. It's a native of the South American rainforest, the Amazon, for example, Brazil, and yet we've found that it actually, like some of these true tropicals, does remarkably well here in a Mediterranean climate. So and so it's very slow growing. You need patience because it takes quite a long time to fruit. The fruit is like a big black round grape. It's sensational to look at. It's shiny black and it just looks terrific. In fact, this selection I've got I call shiny black because that's just what it looks like.
How about that?
And the flavour is fantastic. They're beautiful fruit to eat.
You mentioned, we need to wrap it, but you mentioned before the importance of preparation before you actually plant. Could you just give us an overview for the warmer climate evergreens, just the kind of location is needed and conditions?
Right, well, sunshine and shelter are the two key things in terms of environment. Soil, that if you're going to plant these plants, generally speaking, pick the best spot in the garden, the absolute best spot, warmest, best sheltered, best soil, and a spot where you know you're going to be watering properly. and then prepare the soil so it's friable and loose. Doesn't have to be a deep soil, but friability and loose, so roots make easy growth, and then plant at the right time.
Can I just ask a dumb question? What is friability, Chris?
Friability, it's a question well worth asking. Friability, in my mind, is to do with air, the availability of air to the roots. The roots, it's so obvious in the nursery business how important air is to plant growth. Air in the roots, of course, I'm talking about here. So potting mixes are made to a formula where they have to be, there has to be a proportion of air to solid of something like 25%, 20 to 25%, to make sure the roots grow, and the same in the soil.
Okay, so it's not going to work if you've got a compacted clay soil. You need that friable soil.
Some plants will cope, but generally speaking, friability is terribly important, especially during the establishment phase when the new roots have to burst out of the nursery pot into the outside soil.
The benefits of planting into a mound if you've got hard clay soil, worthwhile?
Yes, definitely. Mounding is part of the good process, but it tends to happen naturally. If you're adding, my suggestion is you add lots of coarse organic matter, and we strongly suggest composted pine bark as that matter. You tend to build up the volume of the soil, so it should naturally mound to some degree. But then you can take that much further to try and ease the problem with over wetness during the winter.
Just on jujubes, someone's saying at Balaclava High School has one. Greg says his concern is with jujubes is managing the suckering of the plant.
Yeah, that is fair too. We think we've got a non-suckering rootstock, and I expect that's the way we'll go.
And Mark at Goodwood says, our Bowen mango tree and macadamia tree purchased from Perry's 30 years ago now. Mango 7 metres high, 5 metres diameter, produces several hundred fruit each season now, some 850 grams in weight. Last ones will be picked this week.
Wonderful, wow. Wonderful, yeah. Wonderful.
That's terrific.
Before you go, Chris, with this mystery that's out there, the plants, particularly fruit trees, are flowering out of season. Is there? Can we blame the season and not what we're doing in the garden?
It's not so much this season. I don't think it's terribly seasonal. I think it's common. But this season may be a bit more than others by your calls. But late season flowering in apples and plums are the two that come to my mind, is common, and it doesn't really mean much. The buds have been well laid down, you know, just after Christmas the buds were developed, and obviously the environment has stimulated those buds to flower. And sometimes they set.
They get lots of flowers now. There'll be heaps and plenty of flowers for fruiting in springtime anyway.
There's usually plenty of flowers left, yes.
Wonderful. Well, Chris, we've got so many text messages for you, but we're just not going to have a chance to get to them before 9 o'clock this morning. But wonderful to have you in the studio. Thank you for taking some time on the Easter long weekend to join us. It's been a fascinating conversation.
Thanks, Deb. It's been good.
Wonderful, and I think probably has inspired many South Australian home gardeners to maybe rethink what they might plant in their garden, because we are the fruit salad state.
Yes, I'm interested in the number of people that are growing and have grown mangoes with success, and it just means that there are plants out there with big potential, and it's worth exploring and just doing a little bit of extra homework to find out what you need to do to be successful. But Chris Perry, wonderful. Thank you very much for sharing your time, particularly at a very busy time of the year for you.
Thanks, John.
Thank you very much, Chris Perry. Thank you for your calls for Chris. We will resume Talk Back Gardening generally in just a moment. The phone number to call is 1300 222 891, 1300 222 891. John is going to launch the tomato survey for season 2024, and if you've got a question, we would love to hear from you. The number again, 1300 222 891.
This is Talk Back Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe
on ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning and welcome to Talk Back Gardening. I hope you are enjoying your Easter long weekend Saturday morning. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Deb. Good morning, gardeners. And if you grew tomatoes this season, we really would like you to fill in the end of tomato season survey. It's been launched. It's available in the Good Gardening newsletter, and we'll have more details about what and why the benefits of being taking part in this survey later in the program.
Absolutely. Definitely, if you haven't subscribed to the Good Gardening newsletter, jump on and do it. It will arrive in your inbox every Friday morning. But right now we're going Talk Back Gardening. So the number to call is 1300 222 891 if you'd like to ask John a question. I have a couple of ABC Organic Gardener magazines to give away also this half hour. And if you would like to send a comment on the text line, we always love to receive them on 0467 922 891. And John, you're going to give us a bit of an update on fruit fly as well.
Yes, it's most important that we don't go moving fruit around the state, and the fruit fly problem is there, and we'll give you an update of what's happening, particularly here in the metropolitan area, very shortly.
Wonderful. Mm. Let's go now to Victor Harbour. Good morning to Raylene with a fig tree question. Hi, Raylene.
Good morning. I have to apologise. It's a locust tree. I'm sorry. It's about 4 metres high. It's a very nice shape. I got it at the last car park market from Rare Fruit Society. It's doing very well, but no fruit.
But it's only 4 years old, though, you mentioned.
Well, whenever the last market was.
That's about 4 years ago, maybe 3 years ago. Yeah. Okay, look, it's young, and presumably it's growing and growing nice, and there's plenty of vigour in it.
Yes, it's a lovely shape, yeah, and it's okay. Beautiful.
Well, just back off a little bit on the fertiliser, if you're putting on animal manures in particular, and keep the soil moist, but not too. Don't overwater it. In other words, don't overstimulate the plant. You need to get it to slow down a little bit. It's the end of the growing season for your locusts. And what I'd be suggesting is if you can be bothered when it's nice and warm, get out with your hedge clippers or pruners and just take the tips out of the longest, strongest branches and some of the side branches, which are growing very, very vigorously. And what happens is it's all to do with plant hormones, and the hormones for growth are in the tips of the plants, the growing tips. So if the more growing tips you can remove, the more hormone for growth you take away, and that allows the hormones for flowering and fruit to come into prominence. You'll find that hormones for growth dominate and keep the hormones for fruiting and flowering under control. So that's my best bet for you there, Raylene.
Good luck with that, Raylene. Thank you very much for the call. Paul's in Aldgate with a Crimson Glory Vine question. Hi, Paul.
Yeah, hi, Deb. Hi, John. Yeah, I've got a 25-year-old Crimson Glory Vine that grows up over pergola. Used to completely cover the pergola in summer, be beautiful and shady underneath, but the last few years has just stopped growing almost entirely. I get a few leaves coming out of the leaders, and there's canes growing out of the base, but none from the leaders. I've tried different fertilisers. It had about six main leaders, and I cut three of those back last year, thinking it might stimulate the others, but I'm just not getting anything out of it.
That's an interesting description you've given there, Paul, and I would be thinking, oh, maybe it's running out of fertiliser, and it's been there for 25 years, it's used up a lot of the nutrients, and probably needs recharging. But you say that you've been fertilising, and you've also done a number of other things that I would be suggesting is cutting it back. Why is it so? I'm not too sure what's happening there. It's the fact that it is aged, and I think there's something going on with the root system that it's probably not as extensive as it was in the past. Could it be that there are other trees and shrubs with root systems encroaching on the glory vines area?
Yeah, possibly. There's quite a few trees and other plants in the area.
Yeah, if you've been looking after your glory vine in terms of fertilizer and water, you'll find that any other tree in the area will soon find out and move towards it, and you've got competition. I think it would be worthwhile coming out probably a couple of meters from the trunk and trenching around it between, so you're digging a trench, a cut-off trench, between your glory vine and any trees that are coming towards it, their roots are coming towards it. And then the other thing is just trying to get the soil back into top health. So making sure that the soil right now has got some good quality organic fertilizer, manures and things like that, animal manures that's been fully composted, and a good mulch of that around the tree for a 2 meter area around the tree. So look after soil health. In springtime, I'd be putting on a fertilizer for fruit trees that contains trace elements. It could be that the plant has used up a certain trace element and that's inhibiting what's going on. So look after the soil, increase the soil health, a little bit of extra nutrition, and I think that's about all I can suggest.
Mm. Okay. All right. I'll have to get that, continue trying that, I think.
Yeah, I'd be looking for competition, or else, you know, you've got during winter, you've got a gutter sort of running water and you're getting something that's affecting the root system. But it's all to do with your root system. Your root system is in trouble. The fact that it's sending up suckers sends to me, says the plant know it's in trouble. It's sending up suckers because it says, you know, the original's going to die away, and if we have suckers, they can take over. And that, to me, is a signal to you that there's something going wrong in the root system.
Mm, Paul, well, good luck in determining that one. Thanks very much for calling in. 1300 222 891 is the phone line. Kerry is in Port Lincoln. Welcome, Kerry.
Good morning. Yes, I have a raspberry plant in a container. I put it in that from a purchased pot at the probably the end of last season. It's grown nicely, got lots of new growth around the edges, and it hasn't fruited at all. And so I'm wondering, given the recommendation is to cut back the fruited canes, and there isn't any, how do I treat that in regard to pruning for next season?
Yeah, okay. It's important that you do understand the pruning system. On raspberries and many of the berry canes, you've got your it fruits, you'll get your fruit on last year's canes. So if you, at the end of the season, cut off all the canes, you've got new canes coming up in the, that season, but it's not mature enough to produce fruit. So what you need to do is have, say, the new canes which are growing this season, leave as many of the good, strongest ones as possibly can. Anything that's old, not that you probably don't have very many old ones on your bush anyway. So leave as many canes as you possibly can, and they should be the ones that will provide you with fruit next season. And you'll find that they will mature and they should start to send out little side branches in springtime, late springtime, and those little side branches should give you the fruit that you're looking for.
Great.
Apart from that, you know, if it's producing on reasonable growth, are you getting lots of new canes?
Yeah, I have had.
Yeah. I suspect it's the way you're pruning, and if you prune... bone up on get a good book on the pruning of berry fruits.
I just was a bit confused because it sort of said, you know, don't cut back the new ones, and I'm sort of like, and the ones that have bared fruit, and there hasn't been any, so I wasn't sort of sure. Which,
So you need new canes, leave them alone for one season. At the end of one season, they should have fruited. They're the ones you cut off, and in the meantime, it should be setting up new canes, and those new canes you leave alone, you tie down, and maybe shorten them, but they're the ones that will produce you fruit for the following season.
Okay, so would it be harmful for me to just not prune it at all?
Absolutely.
If I'm not sure.
Yeah. Just leave well alone.
Just leave it.
If there are little skinny ones, what you want is 5 or 6 nice, strong, vigorous canes. If there are weak ones there, you can chop those out so that the energy goes into the better canes.
Yeah. All right then. Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Kerry. That's what gardeners love to hear, John. Don't do too much at the moment. Robin is in South Plympton with a feijoa question. Hi, Robin.
We have two feijoa trees in our front yard, and they're about 9 or 10 years old and always produce a good crop of feijoas. This year I've got a lot of feijoas, but they're almost inedible. They're almost bitter, much harder, pithier, woodier than usual. We've got boxes of them we don't know what to do with because we can't eat them, really.
Yes,
why would that be?
I don't know that I can give you a definite answer, but what you're describing is what is happening in many gardens. And as Chris Perry was talking about, there are many plants that are flowering out of season, they're fruiting out of season, and even there are plants, fruiting plants, that are producing fruits and they don't taste normally. And I suspect it's to do with seasonal and what's happening to the tree at a particular time of the year. Now, whether it goes back to last autumn, and autumn is the time when the plant is, fruit trees are setting themselves up for fruiting in the following season. And that's why it's so important that right now you've got deciduous fruit trees, you don't let the trees dry out. I walk around the streets of Campbelltown and I see in people's backyards their fruit trees and the ground is dry, desert dry. And I think those are the people that will be ringing up and saying, I didn't have a crop last year. And my question will be, did you water in autumn? Did you fertilise in autumn? Go and do it this weekend. And I suspect it's probably to do with either what happened last autumn, or as Chris Perry mentioned, in springtime, there was a lot of atypical weather then, and it could be tied up there. I would like to think, though, Robin, that it's a one-off, and maybe next season we go back to normal. In the meantime, make sure your feijoa tree is well watered. If you haven't fertilised, I'll be putting on a little bit of good organic fertiliser. Make sure it's well mulched, look after it, and it should return back to normal next season.
Yes, thanks. We wondered whether perhaps because it started, the fruit started dropping in the hot weather we had a few weeks ago, that maybe it was just too hot for it.
Yeah, well, you'll often find with feijoas, the fruit's got to actually drop before it tastes reasonable anyway. But, it's disappointing, though, very disappointing.
Yes.
But the important thing is you've had success in the past, and I'm sure that will return. So stand by.
Optimistic, Robin.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Carol is in Owen. Now, you've got a red flowering gum, Carol.
Yes, we've got two red flowering gums planted next to each other. They're about 15 years old, both of them, planted the same day. They're about 6 metres high. And all of a sudden, one big bough on one of the trees has just died. All the gum leaves have gone crackly, brown, crackly. It's all dying.
Yes.
And I don't know why.
And it's just on one branch or on say half of the tree, or is it?
Yeah, half of the tree, yeah. The other half is all green and shiny and lovely, yeah.
Righto. Can you describe what's happened around it in terms of, is there another garden around it? Is it lawn? Is it overwatered, underwatered? Is it mulched? Give me some clues.
It hasn't been touched or in the past so many years. It's sitting in, it's got that weed mat type stuff over it, and that was put down 15 years ago. On top of that is bark, and we've had bark put on it twice. I've got drippers all through the garden, and the drippers are in that area all around it, but they're onto agapanthus and other things. It's not an actual dripper on the tree because it's a huge, they're both huge trees, but they do have water all around them, yeah.
Yep. It's difficult being sitting here in this chair. Often people sort of will ring up and say, my tree is dying, and it's not what happened this season or even last season. It's what's happened over a number of years. Without actually seeing it and a major interrogation, I don't know that I can give you the answer. Is there competition, root, a tree root competition?
No,
No.
Okay, well, then I would suggest
nothing's changed in 15 years. It's just the same.
It's more to do with, I think, the way it's been watered and the dryness. And so there's the plant, and it's getting by with your watering. And then all of a sudden we get a period of, 8 to 10 weeks, sometimes 12 weeks, without any rain at all. Mm-hmm. And then the tree is going into quiescence. And all of a sudden you put the sprinklers on or the drippers on, and it gets wet, and it stimulates the roots and the little biotas and things like that, and then it goes dry again. There's just so many variables there that I don't think I can give you a sensible answer to that, Carol.
Yeah, well, should we just chop it off and just hope that something else comes on?
That the area, just cut it off as close as you can to the main trunk. And I would then get into the system saying, righto, well, this is the water system for these trees, and they don't need lots of water and certainly lots of water often. What they need is a deep soak. So once a month, give those plants a good soak. It wouldn't do any harm to make sure that they have got a nice, big, thick, crunchy kind of a mulch. And so you keep the root system as possibly can. You keep the competing plants away from it. If you've got a dripper system, you've probably got your watering system, and the roots of your plants are up near the top surface. The tree has discovered that. It's got its root systems up there, and you're putting on enough water for your plants, but there's not enough water for the tree, and so it shuts down part of its root system. That's a conjecture and one of the many things that could be going wrong.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your help anyway.
Thanks, Carol, because those are beautiful trees, red flowering gums, and I hope that you can save it. Thank you very much for the call. Deb Tribe and John Lamb talk back gardening with you on this Saturday morning. In a moment, we're going to launch the Tomato Survey 2024 and have a bit of a look back at how important it's been to us over the last 13 years. But right now, giving away a couple of ABC Organic Gardener magazines. One by phone, if you haven't won anything from ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia or Broken Hill in the last month, call through on 1300 222 891. Otherwise, send your full name and postal address by text to 0467 922 891. We'll give away one each way.
Talk Back Gardening with John Lamb and Deb Tribe on ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Tomatoes, John.
So, what kind of a tomato season did you have? For some people, it was a great season. Others, disappointing. We want to know, how did you fare? And the way you can let us know and help other people grow better tomato crops is to fill in the 2024 End of Tomato Season Survey. It's been conducted jointly through Talkback Gardening and the Good Gardening Newsletter. The survey is in this week's newsletter, and it'll be repeated next week in next week's newsletter. And you've got 2 weekends to fill in the survey, this weekend and next weekend, and we will close the survey on April the 8th or 9th, whatever Monday is, and it'll take a couple of weeks to go through the information. The survey, of course, is computerised. Deb, I was rummaging through my notes and I found some notes from 32 years ago, a tomato survey we carried out 32 years ago.
Wow, that is going back in time, John.
So that's going back to 1992. And we were looking then at, of course, the programs weren't computerised. The people had to send in their survey by writing on pen and paper and mailing it to us. And I used to get very excited if we had 100 mails to go through, and it took quite some time to go through it. So we've sophisticated a little bit since then. But the focus then was very much on organic matter, and it was very, very clear that the people who were having the best crops were putting organic matter in their soil probably 2 or 3 months before they actually planted. And people were telling us, and I could, because they sent in their information by mail, I could get on the phone and talk to them and get them on to talk back gardening. And they would describe digging these trenches and filling it full of organic matter and then putting their tomato plants on around the edges in springtime. And that led us to this concept of looking at why are some people more successful than others? What are the factors that they are actually carrying out in terms of watering? And we've been focusing particularly about time of sowing or time of planting. That apparently is having a big influence on the kind of a crop you're having, because our seasons are variable. And if we get a hot season, if you get your plants growing early, maybe it's better. And if it's a cool season, well, who knows? So it's most important you talk, you fill in the information about that. Varieties. People are changing the varieties, and that's because of climate change. 30 years ago, the big issue was heritage tomatoes. Everybody was into heritage fruits and tomatoes in particular. It fell out of favour because we had a run of hot weather and the heritage tomatoes didn't perform well. And the ones that did perform well, of course, were the cherry tomatoes.
Yes.
So we want to know what is happening there. And there's also a change. I think people are becoming aware of soil health and what are you putting into the soil in terms of manures, of fertilizer, of soil stimulants, and it's all tremendously important. You give us that information, we can analyse it, and then we can find a guest to talk about it, or we can get people to give their experience on talkback gardening.
Yeah, and you find the common links of what it is that it makes the successful season, or what makes an unsuccessful season. So it's so important. And look, it only started yesterday, John.
Yes.
When Good Gardening Newsletter hit our inboxes. Have you had any survey responses yet?
I looked this morning and we're just cracked over the 250 surveys in one day. It's not bad. They'll ease off. But last year we had well over 1,000 surveys, and it just provided such wonderful information. So look forward very much to you just spending a little bit of time. Just click on it. If you haven't got a Good Gardening Newsletter, get somebody who's got one to actually send it to you, or Deb, maybe they can subscribe and fill it in next week.
Exactly. You've got a couple of weekends to do it, and then that information is collated by John and will be used both in Talkback Gardening and in the Good Gardening Newsletter to provide information for your next tomato season. So it doesn't matter whether you've had a great season or an unsuccessful season, all of that information is really important.
And just how do they get the newsletter, I guess?
Easy, just to write John Lamb, J-O-N, forget the H, J-O-N-L-A-M-B, Good Gardening. Just put that into your search engine, it will bring it up. You just simply subscribe with your email address and every Friday morning it will land in your inbox. Congratulations to our magazine winners this morning, Gail in Salisbury Heights and Anna in Oakden. We'll send you an ABC Organic Gardener magazine very shortly. Now, John, fruit fly, always an issue, and of course some people will be crossing the border and moving around quite a lot over the Easter long weekend.
Most important that you don't move your fruit from one region to another, either particularly into the Riverland or out of the Riverland. And in early March, we had news that there was an outbreak of fruit fly in the northern Salisbury area. And the big concern, of course, is that's very close to our major vegetable growing area, just to the north of that. Now, I checked and it would appear that they found more fruit fly males, but they were in the lures, and the little lures that they set out there, so they weren't in people's fruit. But probably the big good news is that they were all from the same area, and I suspect from the same property. And the question is, who was responsible? And we won't go into that right now. But somebody has brought in Queensland fruit and dropped it into their garden. That's probably what's happened. And the fruit are flying around. And the fruit fly people are doing a brilliant job in trapping it and making sure it doesn't spread. And if they don't find any more, the people will be out of jail by the 25th of October. But the important thing is, if you're in the quarantine area, you can't move any fruit. You must eat it yourself or dispose of it yourself. If you're in the yellow area, you can sort of move it around the yellow area, but just be aware that fruit fly could be a big problem. And the fruit fly number, if you want to get some information, is 1300 666 010.
And they also provide a lot of details online. So that's the other thing. Just type in Fruit Fly South Australia and it might take you to that page. There is lots of information available there. On the text line, we've received more texts than we can possibly discuss this morning, but I'll end on a nice one from Nathan in the Barossa that says, our espalier apples and pears were spectacular here in the Barossa. Wonderful mild season until late February was the trick. It was brilliant. So that's some nice news. John, what are you going to be doing in the garden this Easter long weekend?
I'm going to have a go at propagating the major new begonias. They are brilliant and they are supposed to be difficult to propagate, and I'm going to have a go this weekend. So I've got about 10 different begonias of this particular strain. They are absolutely brilliant, and I'm going to have a go at see if whether I can't grow my own.
Wonderful. Well, James from Hope Valley is singing the praises of Cineraria and foxgloves. So there you go. Apparently worked out beautifully.
Brilliant colour in the garden. Nothing like it. Anyway, I'll say until next week when we have Darren Ray with his 3-month weather outlook for home gardeners. Until then, good gardening.